on this week's Stack, we head to Hong Kong for the opening of Taschen's first store in Asia, plus our favorite dog magazine and a magazine for the world's best creators and entrepreneurs. Stay tuned. From Midori House in London, this is The Stack, 30 minutes of print industry analysis, and I am Fernando Augusto Pacheco. Coming up on the show, we speak to Marlene Taschen on the publishing giant New Store in Hong Kong, the first Taschen shop in Asia, plus a magazine about the world's best creators. But first, we start the show with our favorite magazine about dogs. And how could you possibly not love them? I welcome here in the studio the magazine founder and editor-in-chief of Dog, Julian Victoria, and their editorial assistant, Hannah Fitzsimons. Julian, first of all, can you take me through the journey from the first issue to the latest one with a beautiful Pomeranian on the cover?
I think the first one we did a Dutch breed. I think it's number 3, number 4. Or the most rare dog breeds in the whole planet. So we kind of wanted it to present that dog because a lot of people are not familiar with it. And the second one was the Shiba Inu. It was a really, really fun issue to do. We got the chance to go to Japan and explore the whole country and to feature also the Shiba Inu, which is a really, really cool breed. And then issue 3, we did the Dalmatian and we decided to go to the Dalmatian coast and we explored the whole area there trying to find Dalmatians, but you only found one. We couldn't find any more, so we had to like somehow be creative and feature other dogs within the magazine. So that's one of the 3 ones that we did, and now we did number 4, which is a Pomeranian.
Amazing. And Hannah, let me bring you into the conversation. Since when did you start working for Dog Magazine? How did you find out?
So I started in November 2017, right when we were starting out, sort of getting to grips with issue 4, thinking what breed were we going to do, where were we going to go for it. Well, I actually heard about Dog Magazine with issue 2. Actually, issue 2 was a gift from a friend and I loved it. And then I saw the job come up and I was like, well, I have to apply for that. And here I am now.
Do a lot of dogs visit the office?
Well, there are 3 dogs there anyway, all the time. And then we don't get many visiting, but we go and visit quite a lot. So a lot of dogs all the time, really.
And I see that traveling is quite an important part for the magazine. So, for example, in the latest issue, Poland is heavily featured, which is quite amazing because it's a country that, you know, I've never been, but I'm quite curious to go. Tell us more, Julian, about your experience there and why Poland? What's the connection with the dog?
When we decided to do the Pomeranian and we did the research, we found out that the Pomeranian is from the Pomeranian region, which is between Germany and Poland. And that region itself is more German than Polish. So we decided to go to Poland because, you know, it's a country that a lot of people don't visit and I think is a little bit underrated. And we want to just explore it and see what we can find there. Also, you know, Germany has many other breeds that we can go back and feature. So we decided to actually take the part and go to Poland instead of Germany. And it was just an amazing trip. We found so many cultural things that we didn't know. We were actually talking to a lot of people who are young creative and they kind of explain what the changes are happening at the moment with the country, especially because the European Union is investing so much money into the country. And all these people are doing amazing things from opening coffee shops, restaurants. You know, we met some people who make actually magazines and they're sponsored by the European Union, which was very, very interesting to kind of like learn. And then we visit, besides the Pomeranian region, we went to Warsaw and we went to Krakow. And it was another experience for us. You know, we loved it. We enjoyed meeting creative people there, meeting, of course, dogs. We had to actually ask people, but we couldn't find many Pomeranians there. We found 3 or 4. And, you know, we met the people and we kind of explained, you know, what we were doing. And they were very open-minded in terms of, like, coming from the houses and coming to meet us in the center of Warsaw or Krakow. You know, we just talk about it, you know, to them about the breed and about how it's to own a Pomeranian, and they actually agree with you. Their personalities are a little bit feisty.
Yes.
So
they beat me once quite harshly, actually.
No. So yeah. So this, you know, it's a really cute breed, but you know, they have the character. And when you get a breed for a family, you need to actually kind of pay attention to all the characteristics of these dogs. Yes, they look cute, but maybe it's not the right dog for your family, especially when you have kids.
I want to ask Hannah here, remember when Julian came last time, you said that sometimes, Julian, there's quite a lot of stories that you don't manage to put in one magazine. Is that the case? Is the process of curating this title quite hard? Because sometimes you have so much material, but then you have to choose the best, right?
Yeah, in the end. It is true. We have quite a lot of things that we've put aside for issue 5. Instead, we thought maybe we'd wait on that and curate what would go best together and sort of take the best submissions and put all that in. And I personally think they all go pretty well together, and hopefully it will carry on the same for issue 5.
What's the interaction you guys have with your readers? Because, you know, it feels such a personal magazine that, you know, if I'm a reader, I would like to get in touch with you guys, for example. You know, for some reason, there is this kind of warm tone to the title. Do you have emails every day about it?
I say our main interaction is through Instagram, and we get a lot of people messaging and being like, yeah, can I be a part of it? And we're always open to any submissions. And we do get a lot of emails as well. And we build sort of a bit of a connection with the people who submit work to us. So, like, they'll keep coming back and be like, I loved working. Could I submit again? And we're always open to that. And I think it's just really good to build relationships with all those kinds of people.
When it comes to the business plan, what has changed now on issue 4? For example, I still see, you know, the magazine still looks amazing as usual, but still no ads. So what is your business plan to it? You know, is it a decision that you made and you want to keep it?
Funny that you asked me that, because with issue 4, we encountered a little problem, and it was the increase of paper price. And we were not prepared to have an increase in our printing quote that we have. So printing issue 4 was more expensive than printing the other 3 issues. So kind of like make you think what to do next, because we don't have advertising in our magazine. The magazine is sold through distribution and we sell them online. And that's the only money that actually we get. But with surprises like the one that we have before printing issue 4, it can actually make you question, do we need to go to the next step and do advertising? You know, we do have people who want to be part of the magazine. Some people from pet insurance, which our brand is not, it doesn't go well with our brand. But the other brands that we love to work with, they are more lifestyle, but somehow they're connected to the dog lifestyle, if you want to say that. So we are considering how can we make more money and to be prepared for surprises like that.
Because, Julian, I don't know exactly what you worked with before dog, but, you know, even though it's only issue 4, the magazine does have a strong brand. I think since issue 1, it's something that, to be honest, you see is like, oh, I know this will last in a way. You know, it's not just a random project. Is this branding also very important to you?
Yeah, of course,
including your Instagram account as well, which is amazing.
Yeah, of course. Just like, you know, we want to create something that is timeless. You know, something that you can put in your house, on your table, a collection item. You know, we get people who email us all the time, you know, can we buy issue 1? I mean, it's sold out and we don't have issue 1. We have like 4 or 5 copies for us, but, you know, we don't want to sell them. So we want to create something that is timeless, from how it looks like to the stories that we present in the issue. We did have an article in issue 4 about Donald Trump. And the main idea of that, it was to talk about the current situation in the country. But we didn't want to make it so up to date, because we want the story to, you know, if you read it in a year's time, just to have no time. So all the things that we tried to do is just, if it was like a book, you can collect and you can actually keep it and you can read it within 5 years and still be very fresh.
And Hannah, if you don't mind, perhaps tell us an interesting article here at Dog Magazine. I have to admit, I mean, I love the Sharon Osbourne interview as well. I think that was quite a good get as well. And I know she loves dogs as well.
We were very pleased with that, especially with the Pomeranian. I think she's very sort of associated with the breed. I think I have 2 favourite articles, one of them being the Trump one, which Julian mentioned, and another being a story. It was called Prison Dogs, and it was a fictional piece about this young couple visiting a prison in America where one of their friends is. And it's not wholly connected to dogs. The main connection was that there was a sort of dog rehabilitation program going on at the prison. But the main story sort of goes along the lives of the main 3 characters. I just thought it was a really good story and liked how we could have it in our magazine because it has that loose connection to dogs. but it's also a really good read.
Another story that I really like, I think it was the editor of Water magazine, that he has a Basenji, which is...
I
want a Basenji.
he's a really... Like, I personally, I have a little admiration for him. He's very creative, and he has this magazine, what he calls a journal. And, you know, I've always been inspired by him from his Instagram, from his other work that he does with other magazines. But he does have this amazing, cute dog that I never met one before. So it was like, let's do this and actually meet this dog because they're very rare.
Yeah. And is it true that he didn't bark?
Yeah. He doesn't bark. Yeah, doesn't have a bark, which is really fun.
It's more of a howl than anything.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So that's an idea for maybe a future issue to have. Of a Sanji to have an issue, and probably issue 6, issue 7. So
who knows, by then I'll have my own.
Yeah. Exactly. There you go. Yeah.
Guys, thank you so much as usual for coming here on The Stack. To Hong Kong now. Early in July, German art book publisher Taschen is opening its first Asia store in Hong Kong. It's the 14th branded store on the world map for the Cologne-based family business. The store in Hong Kong is set to open at a heritage building complex called Tai Kwun, a former central police station newly opened to the public with a mission to promote art and culture. After being in the city for 14 years, Taschen has decided to move its office and set foot at this heritage site. At the store's preview opening this week, Monaco's Kurt Ling caught up with Marlene Taschen, the founder Benedict Taschen's eldest daughter, who is now the publishing house managing director. She talked about the brand new store and what optimism she's seeing in the publishing world.
So 2 years ago, I came here for the Art Basel and I really enjoyed it a lot. And I started talking to people because I really wanted to... I thought, you know, this is amazing. We have an office here. We had an office here for 14 years on Hollywood Road, but just an office. And with an office, you don't have really a face to the company, you know, and you're not really interacting with people in the same way. And so I was like, okay, look, why don't we try to find a showroom or like a kind of a store and then put the office together. And so I started looking around and I asked quite a lot of people. And then I met through a coincidence this great lady. She's called Bonnie and she has a beautiful cake shop and everything.
Yeah.
And she was really fun and amazing and I was telling her that I liked it so much and that we wanted to do something here. And then she said, oh, what about try this space? It's still closed, but you would fit perfectly there. And so I said, okay, great. And we started to get in touch here with the people from the Tai Kwun organization. And then we decided to do this here.
Wow, okay. That was a very quick and a casual decision. Yeah.
It fell into place, you know. It worked out in this way. And so, you know, I had to make like an application. You needed to kind of make sure that we have already a lot of places in historic buildings. So they knew we are not going to destroy the place or something, you know. That was really important to them. And so then they liked the idea of what we stand for and that it's a cultural kind of undertaking, because I think here they wanted to select very clearly and carefully the mix of people to make it a great cultural hub as well. And for us this was amazing because it allows us to have a central, in central Hong Kong, an independent space, you know, because I talked to many different people, also looked at different shopping malls, I looked at also, you know, the H Queens, different things. I looked at everything. And then in the end, we decided that here it would be the perfect fit for us.
Mm. And do you look at other spaces in other cities in Asia as well?
No, I really wanted to do something in Hong Kong because we do have the office structure here already. So it was very easy. And anyway, our office is on Hollywood Road. So the move, which is about to happen, will take like, I don't know, 5 minutes. No, I'm joking. But it's really close. You can't even take a car. It's actually more exhausting probably because you have to carry everything.
Yeah, to wait for a taxi.
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
20 minutes.
Yeah, no, so, you know, for us in Hong Kong it's easy or easier because we already have a base. It's not like that we didn't have a base yet because of this office. So I thought Hong Kong is the most strategic place for that reason, but also because the city is really special, very dynamic, very open. And we met so many nice people here in these few times I was here. It was always a really great experience because people were so friendly, enthusiastic, many good ideas, you know. And I think what I like a lot here is that you can learn a lot from the way things are done here, you know. Like last year, I was at Art Basel and then somebody said something like, oh, poor people in Europe right now, an Asian guy, no? And then I laughed because in Europe people always think they are so cool and above everyone else, no? And then you come here and then the guy says, poor Europeans, because you guys are in trouble. And in a way it's true, you know? I mean, here in Asia they're still much more like growth, future orientated, positive. A lot of situations are also quite peaceful and stuff. In Europe we are more old, no? It's a bit more heavy. So I thought it was very funny when this guy said that, because...
How do you respond to him?
No, I laughed because I thought, you know, actually, you know, this guy is right. Here you have, it's a peaceful situation, it's prosperous. Of course, there's also negative things, you know, like in every society. But it's true that Europe, a lot of its charm, it still has that charm, kind of. But it also has a mentality and also a lot of problems that are difficult to solve now, you know, and... Arguably, also Europe or the Western world is, after its high time, maybe also in a more decline.
Yeah, so from your 14 years experience of running an office here in Hong Kong, what kind of printing or publishing trend that you have seen?
One thing is for sales in the region, but also we did a lot of production already previously in Asia. So quite a few books we've printed here. Then at some stage there was the currency changed, and so it was not as advantageous for us anymore to print here. So we reduced it a bit. But we have historically also always printed books here. And, you know, for example, our basic art series, this is printed here, for example. And so there was also the office had a production reason as well. So it's not just sales. And I think, yeah, for us in terms of activity, we have done maybe more printing here and now less, but just because in some places in Europe and so on, it becomes more advantageous for us to print because it's closer distances. If you come over with a boat, it takes weeks. And since it's not so advantageous anymore, we are not doing as much printing here as we used to do. Having said that, in terms of business and in terms of selling the books, we have seen a continuous growth. And that already in itself is great because whereas in other markets also the situation in the book trade is not an easy situation, you know, and with the general market really being in general struggle, this has been a continuous
positive,
you know,
positive return
from, exactly. Yeah.
Even ahead of all the headwind and all the...
It's a generally positive situation here. Yeah, exactly. So also, you know, we used to even have warehouses in Singapore and so on as well. But then the warehouse closed down. It was not had nothing to do with us. So for the moment, we also do quite a lot of things via the UK. So it's a little bit, it's a global, global thing, but it's a good place. And I have the feeling, because already a lot of companies came to Asia quite a few years ago, and especially luxury, they made their living here, no?
Yeah.
And I think what I kind of noticed as well, I think people hear also now that the kind of luxury thing has been really saturated here as well. I think there's still a demand, but I have the feeling people are more interested now also in culture, art,
and so on.
And so I think for us in this moment is a really good moment also to come become present here.
I think a lot of more people now are more interested in printed books and printed materials.
Exactly.
Than just reading on their digital devices.
Yeah.
Because it's more pleasant to flip through and have the tactility of the paper. And so do you feel that from the sales, and do you feel that from your business touch in Asia?
I think the good thing is with us, we tried before to digitalize our books, no? And it really didn't work, because what is special about our books is the image, is the printed image, it's the feeling of it all, you know? And it's also, I guess, this accessible price points and so on. You know, you can't really translate that into a digital format. It just doesn't work. I mean, unless you find really other ways of transmitting the content digitally, okay. So for us, really, the digital world is really a way of communicating, you know, and also for distribution, because e-commerce is fantastic, you know, it's a really very convenient way of buying things. But I think the printed book is, for us, it's really not only what we do, but also what works for us. And I think because our books are often also regarded as objects, you know, it's not just a book, but it's also something that people enjoy.
Yeah, people are proud
to live
of,
with.
Yeah, to live
to
with.
Live with.
Putting a showcase of what they have and,
exactly.
and what their taste is.
Yeah, and I think because we care so much about how our books look like, people enjoy that part of it, you know, so that it's also about the beauty of the book. And I think this is a global thing, not only here, that people seem to appreciate that.
What are the strong markets for your book now?
The biggest markets are America. Then we are still, because historically that's where we come from, also Germany. And Germany is also a big book market in general. We have still, we have many libraries and bookshops. So Germany, and then we have other strong markets, but some of them are more put together, you know, like for example from the UK we do business in Australia, South Africa, Eastern Europe, Middle East. So putting all of this together, of course, is a big market. But I think the singular markets, it's America and then Germany.
Which are the up and coming markets that you're looking or putting more attention to?
Well, now for sure Asia. So I hope already here in Hong Kong with this space, I'm really looking forward to what will come out of it. I think one thing is, of course, we want to grow a network here, you know, and of collectors. But also, I think what will be great here is, I like a lot to have this point here because it will create more dialogue with the local community, but also with different people in Asia, also for editorial projects. And I think that will be really interesting as well, you know, because at the moment, I think this is something we can improve, you know, to make our program even more relevant also for the Asian audience, exactly. But not only for the Asian, but that then also bringing it back to the world. Because what is interesting about our business, I think, is that we are a publisher that is really, truly global. A lot of publishers work more regional. And we have really, we sell our books really worldwide. If not directly, then we have distributors that are our partners. So this I'm really looking forward to also, that we have a program that is continuously evolving and where we kind of cherish diversity and where we kind of really have something that is enriching to the people that enjoy what we do.
Thanks, Kurt, there. And you just heard Marlene Taschen from Taschen and their new shop in Hong Kong. You're listening to The Stack. And finally, here on The Stack, I welcome back in the studio Conor Riss, founder of 99% Lifestyle, a magazine focusing on creators and entrepreneurs from all fields, from pastry chef Dominique Ansel to photographer Alex Stroh. Conor, let's go through changes. I think the magazine changed quite a lot from issue 1 to issue 3. Tell us more.
I threw myself right into doing this whole magazine-making process, and it was very much a case of going in kind of blind to the process and not really knowing too much about the industry, too much about paper finishes, such as like the soft touch finish that I applied on volume 2, and then also embossing and foiling. And I think with the first two issues of the magazine, they were very much a way of me just experimenting with different paper qualities, basically. And I think that as it's gradually progressed throughout the issues, I feel like that I've found the right combination, because from volume 2, I wasn't too happy with how the soft touch laminated cover fell on the paper. So then that resulted in me changing the paper stock for volume 3. And then also with the embossed title on volume 2 as well, I decided to change that to gold foiling for volume 3. So it created a bit more of a premium finish to the cover, really.
And, you know, those are the challenges of creators and entrepreneurs, which is what the magazine talks about. And you know, you're one of them. So it's interesting. You're one of them and you're writing a magazine about them. So tell us about which type of stories are you planning to cover in future editions and on this one as well.
So in volume 3, which the issue has just been released, it covers a diverse range of topics and features. So something that I'm not really too much of a fan of is doing themed issues, because in the past I've liked particular magazines, but when they've done a themed issue that isn't really something that I'm interested in, there isn't really anything for me personally to want to pick up that magazine. So with 99% Lifestyle, what I do is I do a selection of themed long form features in the centre of the magazine. And in volume 3, it focuses around business and building a business. So I did an interview with Lewis Howell, who's an entrepreneur from America, and he's got a fantastic inspirational story about how he went from broke on his sister's couch to being a millionaire. I think it was just within a few years. And that story's got so many different aspects of getting knocked down and just getting back up, keep going for it. And it's a fantastic story.
He's on the cover as well, looking very peaceful as well. So.
Yeah.
And you're right about the different names. You know, for example, you have the musician from Lost Frequencies, Dominique Ansel, you know, which is the inventor of the Cronut. So it's really cool. I agree with you about themed editions. I think sometimes they don't work so well. But tell us about the expansion as well. I think you're also present in quite a few countries as well.
Yes. Yeah, so at the moment, it started out very small. So I'm trying to build a base. I think it's important that you start where you're based. So I'm based in Birmingham, so I'm trying to build a community in Birmingham and also in the UK to begin with. But there's also been a great deal of interest in the magazine internationally and abroad as well, because I think partly to do with the fact that the creatives and entrepreneurs featured in the magazine cover all corners of the globe. There's musicians in Iceland, there's bloggers in South Africa, there's really just people from anywhere, really. So I think people from all over the world are probably interested into seeing how, for instance, a designer might work in the US compared to, you know, a designer that works in the UK. And it's very much looking at the different cultures. I'm guessing you've got some experience with that as well from speaking to magazine makers all over the place.
Yeah, absolutely. We like to keep it international here as well. Tell us about your contributors. I mean, do you have an office or how do you get in touch with some of your contributors? I have to say, for example, I do imagine you have some nice photographers as well. I mean, there's really good photography in the title. That's something that is very noticeable. You started as a one-man team. How did you reach out to other contributors?
So at the moment, 99% Lifestyle is still a one-man magazine. So it's very much just a case of me doing this at home by myself. And a lot of these interviews are just stem from either connections I've made at, say, like networking events or just simply emailing people, message them on social media. And I think as the journey's gone on, I've found that creators and people have also got in touch with me to get involved with the magazine and also be a part on the content side as well. And I think as issue 2 went on, that's the first issue I was able to get illustrators on board. And again, I've had an illustrator on board for volume 3. And going forward now to volume 4, I'm in very much in the process of actually getting contributors in terms of the editorial side. And I think that's kind of an important step to make, because I think that when you do a magazine, it's important to not have just one voice present in the magazine. It's good to show a diverse set of opinions and messages, I guess, to go along with the people that are featured in each and every article.
Very good choices. Thank you very much, Connor, once again, and well done for issue 3.
Thank you.
And that's it for this week's show. My thanks to our editors Cassie Galpin and George McDonough. If you have any comments or queries, feel free to write to me, Fernando Augusto Pacheco, and I am on fp@monocle.com. Remember, we're back here next Saturday, same time. You can always listen to the show again on monocle.com. We have a special song for you to end the show. It's by Pope. And the song is Dogs Are Everywhere. You've been listening to The Stack. I'm Fernando Augusto Pacheco. Until next time, it's goodbye from me. Oh, dogs are